cartoons from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. Woo! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Hello, everybody. Welcome to What a Cartoon, where fear is freedom. I am your host, a two-star Goku at best, Bob Mackie, and this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. And today's episode is Kill la Kills, If Only I Had Horns Like a Thistle. It's a dream of mine, guys. And that aired on October 3rd, 2013. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, who is with me.
Naked pig on a strung up Henry Gilbert, hi.
Dead naked pig, who else?
If my underwear could talk, it wouldn't be this fun. I'm Matt J.
That underwear was rude. So yes, this is, we're now, okay, for the first time ever, we're talking about anime. We're in a safe space.
Oh no.
No one can make fun of us.
On the internet?
Yes, and it's all clear, we all like anime. So.
This is a dangerous zone for us, that we've never talked about anime. I think in our Simpsons audience, it is a split between people who love anime and people who do not love anime. And I think, at least for me, my travel to anime was of just, I loved any cartoon, and I definitely watched Voltron and these things that I didn't know were from Japan. But then once I realized things came from Japan and they were uncensored and were full of blood and nudity, like Akira or Ranma One Half or Bubblegum Crisis, I was like, this is the greatest cartoons of all time for me, a 16-year-old.
I mean, I think I was the greatest, biggest weeb of all time without really knowing it, where as a kid, I didn't know where things came from. I didn't look at credits really as like a very little kid, but I'm like, I like video games that feel like this and look like this. I like cartoons that look like this. Why do these cartoons look like this? And then like when I was 11, I would hear Roger Ebert talk about this thing called anime, and it all like came together in my head. Like it's anime. It's from Japan.
Or Japanimation.
Yeah, or Japanimation, if you will. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge anime fan. I had a brief like falling out period when it got kind of weird in the early aughts. Mm-hmm. I think they were going through some the same problems that like video game developers in Japan were going through. It's just like, we have to make the worst, most pandering crap because no one is buying this but the hardest core nerds. Mm-hmm. But then in the last 5 years, anime, like modern anime, has been really, really good. I would say
everyone's making it now. Netflix, Amazon just gave up on their thing, but they're kind of still leaning into it. They're getting a lot more money than they've had in a while. Mm-hmm. I think
Netflix has been just a boon for anime, especially Studio Trigger. Mm-hmm. Who made Little Witch Academia. Mm-hmm. Through Netflix.
They made it into a series first, and that was Kill la Kill comes from before that new thing for Trigger. And I guess I should mention that this episode, we're doing Kill la Kill. We all love anime anyway, but this was a choice of one of our premium Patreon supporters, Jose de Sequeira. Please forgive me if I mispronounce again. But, if we have any open spots in the $50 a month level, you can make us record a cartoon of your choice, too. And that's not porn. That's one thing. We're not doing it.
No. Not porn or Family Guy.
I'll never have fun.
Look, you can make me watch the worst episode of Family Guy. Yeah. If you want to spend the money, I'll do it, you guys.
Now, okay? It'd be the best one, the Bank Vault episode.
I would watch that one. I'd be fine with that.
Like 17 years ago, I reviewed anime for a quote-unquote living. I've seen much worse things than Family Guy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's also how I felt watching this. I've seen much worse things than the lowest moments of this show, and I really liked Kill la Kill. I watched the first two episodes, but
I only watched the first one. But I mean, I'm familiar with Studio Trigger and what they do. I know how great their shows look. But when I was watching this episode one, I just thought, like, I want to show this to anyone who thinks Japanese animation is cheap looking or bad looking, because the only Studio Trigger does this, but it is just a glorious looking show. Not only with how great the scenes look, but how effectively they will cut frames to make things more impactful or make fights seem more intense.
Movement in space, the impact of a hit, just the comedy they get out of just how somebody flies through a screen is beautiful. Beautiful. Like, it is a tribute to animation, just in the love of animation too.
And there's some like anime humor in it, but there is some genuinely very funny moments, and it all comes from the physicality, which is a thing that is translatable. Like, jokes from Japan tend to not translate, But somebody reacting a certain way, you know, that's not based around any sort of language.
In terms of pure, just the animation of it all, this is an animation podcast, by the way, but it reminds me of, like, boxing anime from the 70s or sports anime, where in a fight, when someone finally lands, like, a really brutal hit, it'll just be, like, a painting of that happening and, like, shaking. It's like, a really old technique that you could say it's cheap, but it's, like, more work went into that one drawing than, it, than the, like, 20 frames of animation would cost, I think.
I had always wanted to try Kill la Kill because it looked beautiful. Beautiful, but it is the horny aspects of it that did always kind of keep me at a distance of like, man, I wish this seems too horny on the outside.
Less, and a lot of underboob.
Yes, quite a lot. Yeah. And look, I don't want to shame anyone of like, if you get your jollies watching this stuff, have fun. I'm not, this is not a judgment so much. I mean, though, if you're going to complain SJWs took away your vagina bones, then I do think you're stupid and you need to shut your fucking mouth.
I will say, I do like sexy characters. I like women, by the way. I like Bayonetta. She's very cute. But
I like
it's just
sex.
Like,
I like sex with people. I like sex with women.
I like sex. But I will say, I kind of wish, like, do they have to be in high school? Can she be a little older, please? That's my request with a lot of anime, actually.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, I would enjoy this sexy character if she wasn't like a minor. I would enjoy her more.
It used to be like you'd be like, okay, don't watch that one because that's a horny show, ignore it. But like nowadays, every show kind of has something in it, and this is one of those examples. This is a great show, or like Haruhi Suzumiya or something, like even like Azumanga Daioh. Like you get to one part, you're like, oh, come on. Show
Azumanga Daioh, like go back and cut out the hilarious pedophile. Just like, we don't need that guy in the show.
Well, but he's I mean, he does touch anyone. I'm making apologies for. I love Azumanga Daioh so much.
But yeah,
but that,
But I'm thinking of crawling under the volleyball net or whatever that made the one girl almost naked. That scene was like, oh, crap. Yeah, come on.
Yeah. Though, if you want a non-horny version of Azumanga Daioh, watch Nichijou, because that is just like they don't have to draw any character like a voluptuous woman, which they do in Azumanga,
and it's crazy absurd, like Nichijou's in the hall level absurd.
It's fucking Tim and Eric that show. Yeah. It's so good.
Yes. So let's talk about Studio Trigger. Henry, you're sort of heading up this episode. What did you find about them? Because going through the history of this and also Hiroyuki Imaishi, that's the like the co-founder of Trigger, he is a very, very important animator. I will say maybe one of the most skilled living Japanese animators currently existing in our world.
Yeah, so in case you don't know, the studio Gainax, they, in the 90s and also 80s and into the 2000s, were one of the premier anime studios in the world, especially thanks to Neon Genesis Evangelion. But not to mention Wings of Aionomies, Katakano, and Gurren Lagann.
And Fooly Cooly, right?
And Fooly Cooly, of course. I cannot forget Fooly Cooly.
This show has a lot of Fooly Cooly DNA in it.
Yeah, I was thinking that the whole time. I was also thinking of Gurren Lagann a lot, which you also pointed out, Bob. It feels very much like it.
It's the same series director. And it's way hornier,
well,
too.
Well, so after the success of Gurren Lagann, Gainax also was going through a very weird period. At one point, they had restarted the retelling of Evangelion as films, got back together with Hideki Anno, and they were also being sued for tax evasion by Japan. They were in a tight space, and so a lot of the people who were key staff on Gurren Lagann left to form their own studio, which is Studio Trigger, or just Trigger. Either one works. It was founded by Masahiko Otsuka and also Hiroyuki Imaishi, who is the lead director on Kill la Kill, and it seems like the Miyazaki of Studio Trigger.
He is amazing. He directed Dead Leaves. Have we seen Dead Leaves?
Oh my gosh,
yes. It is sort of like the spiritual sequel to FLCL in a way, just like a bunch of crazy things happening. He was also, I think, like the main creative force behind FLCL Episode 5, which has one of the best fight scenes, where it is Haruko, she's surfing on the guitar, fighting the hand that has like fingers with hands on them. It's just she's fighting a giant hand.
And that surfing on a guitar is a reference to one of the first Gainax things, which is their advertisement for, what was the convention?
Daikon.
Oh, yes, Daikon 4, I think it was.
Daikon. She says Daikon V in that episode, so maybe
it's
basically
five. An Otaku no video as well.
Yeah.
And he also was a key animator on Evangelion as well. He'd been back that far and had worked his way up. He was also a director on Re:Cutie Honey, which is very important to talking about Kill la Kill, I would say.
Oh, for sure.
So Re:Cutie Honey.
Half-naked lady.
Yeah, well, so Cutie Honey, in case you don't know, she was the first magical girl anime and manga created by Go Nagai.
The Devil Man Guy.
And so when they remade it, it's been remade a million times. Gainax in the mid-2000s had their own hand at it. technically Hideki Hano was director on it, but it actually was a more like a project for within Gainax, where a different director directed each episode instead of having a series director. And the first episode was directed by Imaishi. So that's that is really the connection to this. And I watch Rikudi Honey. It is gorgeously animated. If you watch it now, you're like, well, this is all the Studio Trigger people. This is just pre-Studio Trigger stuff.
That was a big one for me, because in my anime development, which started with, I also would watch shows and be like, what is this? And discover all the things I like are from Japan. I think the only show I really watched and had my mind blown was like Pokemon. I had watched that for a while. And then I think by the time I had found Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball at 6 a.m. on the WB, like, I think I knew at that point, this is anime and I'm watching. And then
for kids.
Yeah, and as I got more into Dragon Ball, I'd go to not the close mall, the far away mall that I'd make my mom drive me to buy bootleg tapes for like $30 for three episodes or whatever. When we got digital cable on demand, there was the anime channel, which was my first, like, this is grown up anime. When I was like 14, I was really getting into like Golden Boy, and Rikudi Honey was on there. Yeah, Golden Boy was on there. The Burn Up OVAs were on there. Like a bunch of weird, I think Get Backers and Slayers was on there. So I was watching a lot of cool anime.
Bob is the biggest Slayers fan I know.
I'm a big Slayers fan. TV only, no movies or OVAs.
So you tweeted as one of your top 5 or top 10 intros.
Slayers next, definitely. Yeah. One of the top 10.
And Rikudi Honey was on there too. And I watched it because I was like, I heard this girl gets naked. And then I watched it. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it is a sexy show, but it is also just amazingly animated. Mm-hmm. and it's very postmodern too, like when not unlike in Kill la Kill, when a character gets naked, somebody says like, well, this is a bit excessive.
Yeah, they are self-aware about it.
And last thing I'll say about Studio Trigger is, if you're not really a big anime viewer, you might have seen their work if you just love American animation or games. They have done a ton of freelance work, mostly on OPs, or opening themes of shows. I'm talking in anime parlance now. But if you played the video game Project Cross Zone, the first one, they did the opening animation to that. And they did the opening to the second season of Black Dynamite. They did the opening to the show OKKO, Let's Be Heroes, my new favorite show.
Wow.
And most importantly to me, the song Here Comes a Thought from Steven Universe, that sequence was entirely animated by Studio Trigger.
Cool. Wow, so, I had no idea.
So even if you don't think you've seen Studio Trigger's work, you might have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we should also mention, also co-founded by Max Landis. Oh, wait, that's Trigger Warning. Never mind. That's making fun of
way different Triggers.
How dare you?
I soiled the podcast.
But I'm very worried about Fooly Cooly 2, by the way, because I love Fooly Cooly, but it's just
me
like,
too.
Why couldn't you just get Studio Trigger to do it? It's all the people. It's some of the key people, but I'm just so worried about
it. They might have looked priced out on it, I think, perhaps. Also, Studio Trigger can only do so much. This Kill la Kill was a huge deal for them because they, after splitting off from Gainax, this was their first real production. They had done some small, like, shorts, but Kill la Kill was the show they had been working on from the beginning to be like, this is our show. This will make Studio Trigger. And I think that also explains why Kill la Kill, some of that pandering stuff you talk about, Bob, and also some very toyetic characters in this too. Like, they are thinking about merch. They are thinking about horny fans who will buy the last episode on OVAs. They're thinking about a lot of that stuff in this, and you can totally see it on screen. It can detract from moments of the show for me, but I get why they did. It is like an economical need of theirs. They need to do that.
It's a very expensive looking show. I assume that people are working themselves to death. I hope Imaishi does not work himself to death like so many animators have in the past. Like, we probably still have Satoshi Kon if he wasn't just like a hardworking like guy who just worked himself into the grave.
Don't tell me that. Blaming
him, but it's just like, I'm sure his poor health was due to his working habits, you know.
Osamu Tezuka could have lived into his 90s if he didn't feel like, well, I have to draw 20 pages a day, like, or else I'm lazy.
We're watching Miyazaki do it now. How many times has he retired?
Yeah, he's honestly, I am shocked. He might be the Keith Richards of anime, in that he's like, you have done so much to yourself in that just being chain smoking and never stopping drawing, and yet you're living in your 70s, and watch him die now that I've talked about that.
He's the one guy that I believe, like when Ponyo came out, he was like, yeah, I drew all the waves. I was like, I believe you.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You're at 90.
He won't stop. He's even early 70s is how old he is now. I mean, there's a reason also that I worry more about him than Isao Takahata, because Takahata he's like, yeah, one movie a decade. That's my speed now. I'm going to do that. Another thing I'm happy about watching this show, before I watched this, I watched Devilman Crybaby.
Me too.
And had I not, I wouldn't realize this at least in the first episodes, Kill la Kill is so Go Nagai. It is mm-hmm. in love with Go Nagai in its mix of fascistic imagery plus porno stuff. Like, Go Nagai lived in the highbrow and lowbrow at all times. Or he's still with us, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I just saw him introduce a movie I didn't like.
But Devil May Cry, baby, is so true to original Devil Man. But that's all Go Nagai created. Cutie Honey. He created Devil Man. Kekko Kamen.
Mazinger.
Mazinger.
Which is the movie I didn't like.
Yeah.
The new Mazinger movie.
But the original Mazinger Z was the first mecha show. It was the original. He invented the idea of, like, yeah, a guy goes in the robot and he drives the robot from the inside.
Another Tezuka. Like, yeah. He's the guy in between Tezuka and Miyazaki.
But as a fan of Go Nagai, you also have to accept that he thinks with his dick about half the time. Like, he draws characters and be like, well, she's naked half the time. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's just the character. It's the story I'm telling.
The show has a very 70s look to it. Like, especially mm-hmm. characters like Mako. Like, she could be in a 70s anime, but it's like the 70s look, but with the digital techniques of the 2010s.
Mm-hmm. Well, they even, like, specifically highlight, you know, all the characters' power. They're basically wearing Iron Man suits that are all school outfits. And she even said a sailor suit. Like, that's like if you or I had, like, a regular school suit. Like a dorky, or no? It's like if we were wearing like a big fur coat and had a pork pie hat and a little penny, and we're like doing the Charleston.
That is a perfect explanation. So yeah, I think that Imaishi clearly enjoyed his work on Cutie Honey and wanted to make a Go Nagai show of his own, just in that same style with the same interest in boobs as well as horrific violence.
She feeds her sailor suit blood and it makes her into Iron Man.
Yes.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
So I guess we start off this episode in Hitler class. Is that what class this is? It's like, what are they like? I only watched the one episode. I'm gonna watch the whole series. I really like this episode. But like, are they implying like Hitler won the war? Like, what is this universe they're in?
I wanted to ask you guys what there's, because a lot of times the first I just watched a movie called A Serious Man. Have you guys seen this? The Coen Brothers movie.
I haven't
seen
it.
It starts with basically a short film about a ghost. It's about a kind of Jewish demon that haunts like that's in Jewish lore, and it has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. And the Coens have said, like, oh yeah, it's just tone setting. Like, the first scene is often a tone setting. What are they trying to say with this? Well, are they trying to just point out fascism? Are they,
like,
trying to...
The school is very fascist. Yeah. It's run by, like, dictators through, like, via nepotism.
Yeah, well, I mean, Satsuki just has a Big Brother speech, so I think it's to say
Oh, that is, like, 100%, like, ripped from 1984.
Yes, and I think that thing is just tone setting of... The history of the world really doesn't matter in this. Like, the facts and continuity are so malleable in so much anime that I don't take this as like, oh, well, this history class is going to matter in that how history works. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just to say that you think fascism was in the past and defeated, and yet it is alive and well at this academy, and that you are immediately introduced to that by Ira coming in the room and just towering over everyone, just like, yep, this is the boss. Like, there's you don't have freedom here.
I love just how they will draw anything to make it cool, even if it's not realistic. Like, he grows over the teacher and then he shrinks back down. Like, he has to like squeeze himself into the door, but he's actually a normal size, semi-normal size person. Yeah,
the rent can get in your mouth.
he can be any size as needed for the moment to express an emotion, which I just love about the fluidness of that animation.
Yeah, they set so much stuff up through action, not through people explaining things. Like, we find out about the uniforms through an intense action scene, like how important the uniforms are, how they work, what the different rankings mean, things like that. And man, the fight scene this episode opens with is amazing. They are showing off.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When what's the disciplinary guy's name?
Ira.
When he throws the guy out of the school, you the camera like rotates around the 2D animated person as mm-hmm. he's like skidding along the ground. And that happens more than once.
Yeah,
and I'm getting really excited. I can't not like talk about the show without gesticulating awesome. Wildly.
Yeah. And his matrixy dodging of the whips too is just so cool. Also, yeah. though they show that the action can be comedic right from the beginning too, because when the unnamed class mate is running away, Ira jumps out the window and he is falling at the same speed as he's running down, just like
I love that insane time. Run where the camera just keeps pivoting around him. Again, yeah. I'm going to smack someone in the face talking about the show. There's just like so much motion happening.
The thing that really hit me, and also I can't wait till you watch the second episode, because the second episode has a fight scene that's like, this would be the last episode of most anime.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, yeah. the fight scene at the end of this episode feels like, this is expensive, this is amazing, yeah. this is going on for a long time, and I love it.
The thing that really hits me about this show is yeah, it's about all those things. It's about how like cliques in high school feel like fascism. It feels like your high school is run like this, and to the point that like it runs the town and the world around them. So it made me think of two things. One was Mean Girls.
Yes.
This is anime Mean Girls. And the other one was Friday Night Lights, because it made me think of how like school sports and school functions run the entire town, which is kind of like if you live in a small town where your local high school football team is like the thing everyone does on Friday nights. That's what I felt like. The poor people being like the poor people in the slums knowing about the rankings of the high school are like, you're 40. Yeah. Like, there's
you have a great point. That's a great point, Matthew, because I was thinking like, this is a show made by Japanese people, duh. And if you are a Japanese person, you were in school for a long time. They don't get huge summers off or whatever. School is your life. You must join organizations.
10 months of the year.
Your club, the student council president, the most preppy girl controls everything in this.
And the people who made this show, I'm going to say, they probably weren't in clubs. They probably were like drawing like naked girls on their desks or whatever.
They were
like
the fucking dork who gets killed in the beginning of this episode. That's exactly. They were.
That's why they hate the tennis, the like sexy tennis skirt lady that's in the next episode. Like, they hate those people.
So I can see why the writer of this show was just like, yes, I identify with the outsider in this world of like social cliques and social hierarchies that are like mandatory for most people.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of anime are about like every Persona game is about someone who moves into town, and that's a weird thing. Like, oh, he's a new kid? Oh, new kid.
I mean, I couldn't count how many anime I've watched. I'm like, this is the introduction of the new student in class, which is episode that does that too. The show in general embraces tropes so much, but also to comment on them about at least half the time. And also design-wise, Ira and the rest of the Elite Four, them and their Goku suits, the way design-wise their three stars are drawn into their suits, like, is just, it's beautiful.
It's very, yeah, it communicates so much. Like, you can see, like, what rank they are immediately.
Yeah, and they do have to, like, throw in so much information in this episode. Honestly, they still have to throw more fucking information at you in episode two. It's just too, and in my second viewing of the first episode, I was like, oh, I missed that. I missed this other key plot point because, you know, you mentioned Ren and Stimpy. I was thinking of that, too. In the first shot where they freeze frame and it's just a painted thing when the unlucky student punches Ira and nothing happens, it made me think of when they paint a scene to emphasize it for emphasis, just like they would do on Ren and Stimpy, of just like, no, this is a particularly gross moment here, so we're going to have to just paint it. Like, we can't just draw
a very lavishly drawn picture of Ren's mouth with rotting teeth.
With a tooth mucus hanging off of the nerve.
Oh, yuck.
But yeah, I mean, the stakes are already really high. Within the first 5 minutes, we have a fight scene. We find out if you disobey rules of the school, you will be killed. This person is murdered.
Yes, they are killed and strung up. Yeah. Their corpse is strung up nude as punishment, which I think is them showing the stakes of the show, too. Just like, this is a silly, funny show, and damage to someone should not be taken as realistic, but people can die on this show. Like, there are things will happen to Mako that you're just like, well, she should be dead. And you just have to ignore that because she is a Looney Tunes character existing in the world of regular people.
She's kind of like the Milhouse of this show.
She
like the dorky friend who can suffer any amount of abuse.
And also, Ira's denuding of the man who stole the Goku suit is a very early setup of like, to lose in this world is to be left naked, which is also kind of a promise to viewers, like, you're gonna see this person naked.
So with more showing off in this series, they do like this amazing like camera shot, like moving like away from the school. Is that how it happens? And like,
from the school down to the slums.
Yeah, again, they don't need to do that, but they're showing off, and they love showing off. So we meet the transfer student Ryoko Matoi. We see her, she immediately is a badass who outsmarts a street urchin who ends up stealing her lemon, not her wallet.
Tropey moment.
Yes.
A lemon she's just eating. eating.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
That's
in
what
Japan?
A badass she is. She's like, I'll just fucking eat a lemon.
It's just how cool she is. Okay. Like, yeah.
And then she mocks the kid because in Japan, like, the thing is, like, if you sip something a girl sipped, you're, like, kind of kissing her. So it's like, was that your first kiss?
Yes, yeah. And I've seen before the idea of, like, oh, your first kiss tastes like lemon. And so it's both of those things together. Your first kiss tastes like lemon and transference kiss, which I've seen. I've seen both of those in so much anime because I've watched that much.
It was in Fooly Cooly as well.
Oh, yeah, sharing the soda in the beginning in the first episode.
That's like the last shot of one of the episodes. It's like swinging the cup of whatever,
that's
the glass
of whatever. That's him like taking a step toward manhood.
Yes.
It's just dealing with it.
And that's stealing his brother's girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, shit, we gotta do that as a thing.
We have to.
And I also love the rocking soundtrack by Hiroyuki Sawano, who's also the composer for Attack on Titan. That's he's a composer on his own. He doesn't only work in anime, but just the guitar licks on this, especially, I mean, you need the guitar because Ryoko is walking around with a guitar case. So it just, you've got, it's a freebie right there of music thematically there.
Mm. Oh, and the one of my favorite things is the art for soundtracks from anime and anything from Japan. Like, Japan incidental art is better than any art we create. But I'm going to show you guys, this is not for the listeners, but like, that's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
When I go
man.
To Japantown
and
I go to Kinokuniya, I just look at that shelf of $60 CDs I'm never going to buy.
Yeah, it's a nice collection of pictures, but not so much a thing you would buy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's I feel bad because that's a cool place and I want them to be a business. I will not pay $60 for a CD.
I am a member. I get 10% off everything I buy there.
Wow.
But it cost me $25 and I will never make that money back by getting 10% off.
So I like, you get to see Ryoko as a badass immediately by beating up like those kids who are trying to rob her. They're like, it's a cute little gag. They say, like, our strong suit is that we're weaker than everybody. Like, it was a cute little...
Their strong suit, which I think also might be sort of a pun. I don't know what it... Because I feel like that's maybe the pun of the whole series.
Clothes make the man on this show. That is the meaning of it.
It's sort of a... I guess it's a minor save the cat moment because she could really, like, kill all these children, but she just kind of, like, shoves them away. It was like...
Shows her go, like, yeah, you bit off more than you can chew. I'm letting you go. And then you get Mako's true first appearance in it of attacking her brother. And if you want to, I'm the wrestling fan here, so I can tell you, Mataro gets put in a muscle buster and then a half Boston crab. Those are the, it's something I just love in anime in general. When you see the animators draw in wrestling moves, you're like, I know this person is a wrestling fan.
Oh, they're all real moves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mako sort of like understands this is very like, I don't know, meta, and that she's like, well, I am your doting best friend. That's my role on the show. She immediately like attaches herself to Ryoko.
She's like, you sit next to me. I'm your friend. I get to that. Mako is aware that like, we got to speed this up. Like, this first episode's going along here. I got to say, here's all the exposition. This is who everybody is in the school. And this is what these suits mean. And you're my best friend. And just the way she.
And she almost misses her train. Like, yeah. Exposition. Like, no, I got it. It's fine.
And I love when she dives at Ryoko and just has a banana peel on her head afterwards. And how she says, like, Ryoko asks, so that person who was dead out front, what's that? Like, oh, that happens all the time. Don't worry about it. Anyway, let's just, and she just steamrolls on.
And then, a hell world.
Yeah, it is a hell world. And then when Ryoko enters the class for the first time, again, the transfer student scene, we are back to the same Hitler lesson, which tells you it's like the homeroom teacher is checked out, but there's more to him than
one
would seem. Yeah.
Yeah, I also love the way they use the red text on screen. It is hell if you're reading subtitles at the same time, so you kind of just got to pause and read it if you don't know Japanese.
Over the screen.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But I mean, I had to pause it. Like, I'm not going to act like I know Japanese because I do not. Like, I have learned enough to know how little I know and to sound even stupider than if I knew nothing.
And that's all kanji, which might as well be, I don't know. I can't figure any of that out. It's not even an alphabet. It's a pictogram, damn it.
You stole it from China. Give it back.
So, though, when Mako introduces the Elite Four, I could not think of Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like, they are the Elite Four who hit every trope of the big bads of a show.
I was actually thinking of One Piece. There's a scene in One Piece in which it's basically, I'm sure it's happened more than once. It's like, Luffy, here are the eight people you'll be fighting in the next 200 episodes. So they just, like, talk about all of them. Like, oh, yeah, he's going to fight all of them.
It's a nice promise they're giving you. Like, if you keep watching the show, you're going to see Ryoko fight all these guys.
You're going to see Satsuki naked.
Oh, man. Everybody. I mean, that's what they don't have. It's a cold open on this show, but in the second episode, they have the OP. The OP is really just showing, like, you're going to see these people naked.
There's,
like,
there's lots of
nudity. Their clothes are going to fly off.
There's like literally flapping boobs in the opening.
Yeah, that is true. Jesus.
We see the scissor blade.
Yeah, Mako throws out the explanation, and then Ryoko is not wasting any time. She's like, oh, you're Satsuki. Hey, this is my blade. I want to fight you right now. Let's do it.
And again, more showing off by Studio Trigger. When she pulls out the blade, it just is like spinning around her body and then and then pointed at him.
It's beautiful.
Or her, Satsuki. Yes.
And there's no like cheap out drawing a circle or anything. Like it looks, you see that blade. Yes. They draw it lovingly.
It moves so well, too.
Yeah, they could take it easy. People would forgive them if they took it easy in some of these shots, but they never do.
Well, I think it's part of why this, so like there tends to be, there's like 50 anime every season. When I look at like, oh, what anime should I watch for the summer season? And it's just like 30 or 50 shows. There's usually one that breaks and we all watch, like your Devilman Crybabies. And this
Yuri
was the
on
one.
Ice.
Of, yeah, your Yuri on Ice. This is the one of that time. I remember everyone talking about it and it being all over. And yet I still haven't watched since. But I think it's because it makes such an impression.
It does. Like, for the moment you watch it, I mean, they built this episode to hook you because it is in their best interest to hook you in the first episode. They don't know if they're going to get another chance.
And it's widely available. It's on Netflix and Crunchyroll and maybe Funimation and possibly Hulu as well. But it's definitely on Netflix and Crunchyroll.
I feel like a goof for watching on Crunchyroll. I should have been watching on Netflix.
No, you're paying for Crunchyroll for a reason.
Yeah, for JoJo, that's what I'm paying for.
Yeah.
So we meet the leader of the boxing club, Fukuroda, who quickly beats up Ryoko.
The second I saw him, I was like, well, you're the first guy she's going to beat. Like, you are the starter villain. And that is, again, a very Gona Guy, but not just Gona Guy thing of, you are going to face a themed villain for this episode. This is a villain of the week thing. Boxing person this week. Episode two is a tennis person. It is a themed battle that will happen. A monster of the week type deal.
So this guy kind of annoys me because, so like what you were saying about the wrestling, it's like real wrestling moves. This guy doesn't move or fight like a boxer.
No.
He just punches really hard with his robot hands.
I don't think
that
they,
bothers me.
I don't think they gave a shit about boxing.
No. Yeah, they clearly don't.
That. It's not realistic, but the fights are so cool. Like he can launch like a million like fist projectiles. I'm not sure if that's a metaphor for how fast he's hitting her, but it looks so cool.
His left is fast jabs and his strong arm is his right, so that's the big one. So a ton of little ones and then the big one on the right.
Maybe think of the Nintendo game Arms too when this guy
was
fighting.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Big spirally punches shooting out of him.
Totally.
I just wish he moved a little bit like a boxer. Because the tennis one, they make tennis jokes. Oh, a love match.
Yeah, that they have there's too many tennis puns.
Maybe
it's
too many.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, I think we do find out he's relying too much on his overpowered gloves though, so maybe he doesn't he's like, I don't need a box, I got these awesome two-star gloves.
But this is a great introduction to Ryuko because she is brought down, like she is at her lowest point, which you need for your hero of the show. If the point of the show is that she builds up and gets stronger, you need to first have her be defeated handily by the lowest person in the organization, which is Takaharu, the boxer. Yeah.
And this episode never stops moving. After getting beaten up, she steals a motorcycle to go after Satsuki. Like,
I love
immediately.
That gag. It's so beautiful.
And she gives the guy's deliveries back after peeling off on the motorcycle.
She's a good person. Yeah.
And then she brings it back.
Yeah, that's right. Note on it. So beautiful. I love her introduction, and this was something I didn't get until the second viewing, that she's going back to the ruins of her house. It wasn't just a random place.
Yeah.
I just didn't read it as that the first time.
Yeah, it's where her father was killed, and she finds his secret lab where his magical sailor suit that eats blood and is alive is.
That somehow the sexy teacher knew about. And then also the teacher goes through the 90s teen film thing of like, take off the glasses, hair back. No, I'm actually
he's
hot.
A different person. Before that, though, we get like the one exposition scene where we meet all of the Elite Four.
Yep.
And I won't say all their names because there's a lot of names here that we're not going to be talking about this cartoon again. But we all hear about like who Ryoko is. She's been going from school to school beating people up. The fact that her scissor blade can actually destroy the Goku uniforms is like one of the few weapons that can do that. Mm-hmm. And I did want to point out that the non-athletic committee chair is played by Mayumi Shinatani, who was Haruko from FLCL. She's got a very distinct voice, and she did not voice act for 10 years until this series came up. So she stopped voice acting in 2003, or her last role, and then she's in this, and her voice is so great. I love her
really
as Haruko.
Impressive. I mean, they're all very tropey characters. You've got the heavy, the handsome guy, the nerd, and then the mean, cute girl. Like, that is such... Ree Cutie Honey in the second episode has that same villain in it, almost the exact same enemy as in Kill la Kill here.
And you bring up an important thing, which is the scissor blade, which is she's using half of the weapon that killed her father. That's a cool thing. That's like, I think that's like Star Wars passing down lightsaber stuff.
And Satsuki is so badass. Like, she is so cool. I love her just grim face. It's awesome.
And how much everyone just worships her and protects her and everything like that.
Yeah.
Especially in the end of the episode, we'll get to that there. But yeah, there's like this 24-minute cartoon, I think I watched over the course of an hour because I was like, rewind, Frame through all this great animation, frame through these little scenes, frame through this backstory where we see, you know, Ryuko's father possibly being killed by Satsuki. I'm guessing that's what's going to happen in the show. Or someone that looks a lot like her with a scissor blade.
I would bet it's a secret reveal that it was somebody not who looked like her, and the plot thickens.
I've had 5 years to figure this out, but don't tell me.
Because I intend to watch all of it. But this at this moment in the episode where she falls into his secret lab, I was watching this with my husband, and I said to him, like, I guess this isn't as, like, horny as I remembered it. I guess maybe it was not so bad, because up to that point, it was not.
I was like, yo, Goober, where's the horniness?
Yes. Boy, did it come.
It's better work, Nerdlinger.
So, that's
speaking of bras, we see Ryuko's bra.
So
we see her breasts being massaged.
This is something in both the first and the second episode that they made me uncomfortable. The suit attacks her. He literally says in the subtitles, I'll just force myself on you.
Yeah.
I'll make you wear me. She says stop. And it's just like gross thematically. Like they knew what they were doing. Yeah.
Senketsu.
Like, we could have had the transformation scene is sexy enough. It's like it's over the top enough. We didn't need like the fake rapey scene before that.
No, and it's more annoying to me because then in the second episode, they have two jokes that are basically the same jokes of she thinks a man is about to physically force himself on her, and then it turns out no, he meant something else. And I was like, you don't have to do this joke twice.
It's a very male perspective, the show.
Yeah, I know. Male gaze is the show.
At least they had the restraint to make her a bee. Yes, she could have been a lot more exaggerated. True. She could have been the girl from Fooly Cooly, or not Fooly Cooly, from Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Which
Bikini
gets
Girl.
Yes. Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. So what I quote unquote like, I guess, I don't know if I like this, but it's just like, you think her outfit is revealing? Wait until she goes like whatever Super Saiyan is in this show where like steam shoots out, her thong pulls up, or her breasts get pulled tighter. Mm. It's like they found a way to make it sleazier.
I do like that you get like a mechanical feel. Like when that happens, it feels like a robot she's wearing. Because that makes it feel like not like magic. It makes it feel like a thing that that her dad built.
Yeah.
It's like a steampunk robot powering up for his big punch. Mm-hmm. It's the same. Look, I'm not, again, I said before, I'm not against her being naked in the show, but it's just like, why are you make this makes me uncomfortable in a show I'm just so genuinely enjoying.
Yeah, you're taking the fun out of it. Like, I'm thinking about sexual assault now. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
And it seems like you're making a joke out of it.
And that's what makes it hard to give. I recently did I was part of a focus group for a streaming anime service. Mm. I don't think I'm supposed to say which one anymore. We may have sort of mentioned it earlier. Part of the thing, they said it separated into two groups, and one group was people who don't like the app and people who really like the app already. And I was in the really like the app already. We're talking to this woman who is a professional focus group lady. And part of it came up where she was like, wait, it's weird to like anime. And like all of us everyone at the table looked at each other and we were like, yeah, like it's way less weird than but we were all like in our late to mid 20s. So we were all like grew up with it being a weird thing. And it's because when you're showing somebody something, when your friend's like, dude, Cowboy Bebop was awesome, what can I watch next? You got to be like, you got to be real careful about what you show them next. Because you're like, oh, okay.
It's
so,
kind of a minefield.
Yeah. So in the third episode of Haruhi, she gives her best friend, like she puts her in that weird outfit and lets all those guys touch her. Okay. So that part's weird. Like you got to think real hard about what has weird stuff.
There are
up.
Certain cultural things that we're inured to that may seem weird or offensive to other people who are not like steeped in anime and Japanese stuff.
Yeah. It's another problem I've had is a fan of Japanese made games too, as an American who likes those, to then try to tell them, oh, you would love, let's say, Danganronpa, but I would also have to warn them, like, well, there's a scene where they peep on all the girls without their consent, and it's just fan service. But if you don't know the term fan service, it just means like unneeded gratuitous nudity that has no reason to be there other than to give a dude a boner. That's the point of it.
And I say, Henry, how dare you censor art?
I know.
It's very important those peeping scenes be in there.
Those scenes have nothing. I was waiting. I loved the first Danganronpa, and I was so ready for like, if this could come back. Everything comes back as a twist. So even this could, and it fucking didn't. It just was, you got to see the girls naked. That's it.
Yeah, in Danganronpa 3, you can take any character to a love hotel for no reason. Nice. At least you can take the men there, too, though.
Okay, that's fair. Well, I will say, it looks like they at least show some, well, not just the guy in the opening, but you do get naked dudes in Kill la Kill, but I feel like their hearts just aren't in it the same as when they draw the ladies.
Nobody wants to see the boxing guy naked. He's like a little like a tiny weird God. He looks like something from like a 60s anime, like some kind of ghoulish boy character.
Well, in episode two, you do get to see the teacher start to undress, and they draw him in a sexual style at least. So I wanted to say, as a fan of Go to Guy, this sequence here is exactly Kekkō Kamen. Which, if so in Kekkō Kamen, if you don't know that series, if you think Cutie Honey is the dirty series, no. So Cutie Honey is about a magical girl who, when she transforms, her clothes explode and she turns into a different profession and a different outfit. It's fun, it's cool, and you get to see a naked woman briefly. Kekkō Kamen is a show about a perverted high school where there is the very virginal Mayumi, who they constantly want to strip her naked. The evil teacher's there, and so they set up all these things to strip her naked and humiliate her. She is always saved by the magical mystery woman called Kekkō Kamen, who she's called that because she wears a mask, boots, and nothing in between those things. And she
Googling this now.
So she runs around naked fighting themed high school villains in the show to save Mayumi, who is almost about to be exposed. That is exactly what Mako is in the situation of. Mm-hmm. She is turned upside down. There is a scene, I looked it up in Google search, of Mayumi being in the exact same pose as Mako is when being held upside down like this. So, and Kekkō Kamen's big move is, she wants to distract people by being nude, distracting with her sexiness, which is exactly what the boxer says to Ryuko later. But Kekkō Kamen's big move is her spread eagle attack, in that she jumps in the air, both legs spread out, flashing her junk, and her enemy is so distracted that she smashes her genitals right into his face and knocks him out.
What a way to go, though. Yes. I mean, if I had to choose one way.
That's why you can't have women in the military, because they're too distracting.
What's interesting about Kekkō Kamen, though, is that Go Nagai never revealed her secret identity, to my knowledge. They have like two characters in the show that, whose body type really would fit her, but I believe he never revealed her secret identity.
The real Kekkō Kamen was inside us all along.
But so that's how Tropy, even the handsome guy who's talking to the boxer, he says, yeah, this is a classic thing you're doing here. And just like, he knows this is a Tropy moment here. But it's exactly Kekkō Kamen. If you watch the first episode of the Kekkō Kamen anime, it is this sequence.
When is that from? Is it a 70s show?
It was a 70s manga. The OVA, I believe, is from late 80s, early 90s. They were published in America, the anime OVAs, by ADV in the mid 90s.
Yeah, so they're trying to lure out Ryuko, and they're going to deep fry Mako. And there's one line of dialogue, which I think is more like, I'm trying to figure out what the social commentary is. I'm culturally removed from what they're trying to say here, but we learn that Satsuki is the daughter of the chair of the board of directors of the school. So just like pointing out like nepotism and cronyism and things like that, I guess.
I've seen many anime about the impotent principal who can't do anything. And it might just be, maybe that's a structural thing in Japanese high schools. Like bureaucratically, the principal has no real power, and it's whoever owns the school or gives the most money or something like that. I would love some insight into this from the Japanese cultural perspective from any listeners.
Who do they have to invite over for an unforgettable luncheon?
So this fight is really good. I'm really looking forward to watching more of these fights, but this first episode fight is fantastic. I loved every second of it. I love like the different you have not seen my true form things that happen in this.
I love when Ryuko saves Mako, and Mako is straight as a board and just dumb the entire time, like, huh? What? And even the handsome dude comments on like, she has a lot of spunk or she's just stupid. One of the two. And yeah, the big fight. First, her secretly in her wearing that thing covering her naked body. But then when it's revealed, she is blushing. Her embarrassment becomes more of a story point in the show. But she is embarrassed by the outfit, but she can't say no to the power it gives her.
I wasn't sure if the blushing was just like her fighting spirit, excitement for being in a fight, or embarrassment.
Well, the power of embarrassment is actually sort of it energizes her.
If only I could harness that every day.
So the more nude she gets, the more powerful she is.
This sounds like a Zack Snyder argument.
Yeah. is pretty much...
This is empowering women. The more naked she is, that's how powerful she feels.
What's that shit-ass movie that's trying to be an anime?
Oh, boy.
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch.
I knew it had a stupid
name. Screw that movie.
Yeah, Sucker Punch. Ugh.
But is that what they're going for? Like, using your sexuality as a weapon and embracing it, and that's part of adolescence?
No, she doesn't want that.
But maybe she learns. Well, this is the first episode.
So, in the world, I have seen enough anime to know that a lot of them are into the Madonna whore complex, that Ryuko can't enjoy being naked. She doesn't want to be that naked, thus making it more sexy when she is forced to be that. If she enjoyed it and was like, yeah, here's my body, I'm fine with this, then it's not as fun in that way, I think.
I think a good counterpoint would be, or a point that I would agree with you, would be the Fujiko show. It's like a creative director was a woman, and she's very much into being sexy and using her sexiness, and like that's like what she does.
Yeah,
here it's way different.
Fujiko Mine solo show is the same director as Yuri on Ice, and it does not shy away at all from Fujiko being a sexual being. In fact, she is nude through most of the opening, but Fujiko always owns her sexuality.
Yeah, even in like the 70s show.
Totally.
And her name is literally like boobs like Mount Fuji. So,
but the fight is amazing, and especially him presenting his real boxing glove, and just everybody goes through transformation.
It's a crazy design too. He's like, I'll take off my padding, and there's these two like giant bricks on his hands with all these like ornate things on them.
I did like the goofy animation of saying, "Well, if you're gonna get undressed," and he like grabs his belt, she's like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Which is also a very Evangelion thing. That's like when they meet on the aircraft carrier.
Yeah, when Asuka first meets Shinji on the aircraft carrier, and they see up her dress, and then she slaps him and says, "That's the price." And then his best friend buddy says, "Well, and here's a change." And he shows her his dick.
Oh, right. Yeah. His little wiener kid.
The camera's like between his legs as his pants drop.
Yeah.
You see her.
Back when that show had jokes in it.
Yeah.
Before it all went
downhill. Before it was just playing a Sega Saturn?
Just saying, like, I hate my life.
Yeah. Your friend's Sega Saturn laying on her floor.
Listening to your mini CD player over and over again.
Man, we got to talk about Evangelion.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that'll happen.
Maybe. But the fight is great, especially once Ryuko finally busts loose and just smashes him. She hits him with every punch he had been hitting her with, like smash him in the head, smash him in the face, and an
uppercut.
Yeah, and the uppercut. And I also love her, in the first time they fight, she says, "Oh, then I should take this seriously." And she flips it to the sharp side, showing that she had been just smashing him with the blunt end instead of trying to cut him. And yeah, then she defeats him and strips him naked again. And I thought it was very cute that they had one of his little boxing gloves cover his junk.
Yes, it was a very, very small one too. So it's a nice visual joke.
Well, I mean, he's a weirdo looking guy. Like he's supposed to. That's the joke.
And we end with Ryuko demanding to know like where the other blade is from Satsuki. And I love when she knocks the boxer guy towards Satsuki, and then like a wall of people appears in front of her, and then the Elite Four appear in front of those people, and she gets hit with one drop of blood.
Yeah, and the Elite Four are like, oh no, and they're all about to gang up on her, but Satsuki's like, no, that's not fun. I want to play with this person.
I want a live action. I want comic book movies to go this far. Like when I watch a comic book movie, and I'm like, this guy is made out of CGI. Why is he moving like a real man? Like she's jumping like miles in the air and fighting these guys.
Yeah, like make up your own rules. Yeah, and I love. Like throughout this episode, I love those just like walls of people with bowl cuts just like sliding into the frame. It's just like you can tell it's like these are all of our like brainwashed troops or whatever.
One stars.
Yeah.
The only time I don't like the crowd animation is just, again, it's very tropey of when she undresses, you then have the giant crowd shot of horny dudes going like, whoa, I'm seeing her butt.
Oh, yeah, that happened when Mako like lands nude and like her legs are spread and you see a bunch of dudes look at her and they're like eyes turn into hearts and they're all leering over her. That might be the second episode.
That's in the second episode. Okay. Yeah.
Even the little urchin kids getting horny like when she's like transforming.
Yeah,
it's like what a view.
It's gross, but it's what it's about. I mean, also I will say they put very good work into the animation of the panties pulling up on her when she goes into supernova form of just it like scrunching up. Like,
it's lovingly rendered.
Yeah, you don't think it could get any tighter or any more revealing, but they fool you. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You did it, you bastards.
I thought of another modern one that's like still a little dicey, even though it's the biggest show. It's like My Hero Academia has what's the little wiener?
So, Grapehead.
Yeah.
I love My Hero Academia. I've watched every episode that they've put out. I don't read the manga because I just kind of want to enjoy the anime. I don't
watched
want the manga to
all the anime
it.
And and I'm continuing with the manga. I just got the new volume that just came out.
So here is the difference. It's the My Hero Academia difference, but mm-hmm. it is that Grapehead is detestable. You're not supposed to like him. He sucks.
They make fun of him and they dunk on him all the time. And the horniness is all him. It's not like the show being horny.
Yeah. And when they do, because for example, he has a joke of like, oh, I found a way that I think I can spy into the women's locker room.
Yeah.
On this show, even if they made the joke of punishing him that he can't see the girls in the women's locker room, they would let the viewer see them at the very least in their underwear. In My Hero Academia, he gets poked in the eye for trying to do that, and when they cut to the women's room, they are all dressed, and you are not paid off with nudity like that. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to have their cake and eat it too. They have more respect for the fictional women on the show than to do that.
I will say it loses points for the first scene of the first episode where a colossal woman bends over to show photographers her ass.
That's Mountain Lady, but that's where she makes the money. Yeah. But hey, she's wearing a full body suit. It's true. Just very clingy. There's no skin. Actually, there's a plot point later in the show that they had to legally within the world, they told women, you cannot expose yourselves too much. So they show pictures of when they were this one character who's basically an S&M woman superhero. They show a picture of her before the law, and they're like, boy, you really had to change your costume. She's like, yeah, I know. It sucks.
Mm-hmm. You're representing the company.
Yep, exactly. You becoming a superhero. My Hero Academia fucking rules, and I would love really to do good. The first two episodes of this on this as well.
That'd be great. Yeah. We're talking about anime and manga and stuff. I might as well share my story of looking at something pervy on a manga. I was like, I'm at my pizza place. I'm relaxing. I'll read the new One Punch Man. I like One Punch Man. It's a great series, great manga. And I'm surrounded by families with their children. It's just like, this whole book is about him fighting an S&M villain. I cannot read this in front of these people. It's like, it's totally legit, but it's just like, I don't want this dad looking over and be like, what is this pervo doing?
I was on a plane recently and I was reading R. Crumb comics.
My God.
And I was like, you know what? Never mind. Like,
I read trying to get that aisle seat.
Yeah. I read like one window seat. I read like one issue of it and I was like, all right, I'll save this for when I'm home.
Yeah. I felt that reading. On one of my flights to Tokyo, they actually had a read manga app on the screen on your thing. So I wanted to read. I was like, oh, Dragon Ball. And then it gets to some of the pervier bits. I'm like, I feel weird looking at this on the screen next to this stranger. So then I switched to Bakuman, which is much better. Yes.
That was my one of the first, like, quote unquote manga I read was when Viz first put out, we were just talking about this, when Viz put out Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, the manga, they put it out in 22-page American-shaped issues. And they were flipped, and you'd read them left to right, and it was like publishing manga wrong. Like, this is not how you're supposed to read it.
That's how I read the Pokemon comic, actually. I did, individual too. Issues.
I got the first four issues at, like, Kmart. But then I got to the issues where, like, you know, Bulma's naked all the time, and Goku's dick's out, and, like, they left that in there. And I was like, what? I was, like 9 or 10, and I was like, whoa, this is a comic book.
So, yeah, I felt bad for Viz in those moments because they were just trying. They were told this is how the American comic market works. The direct market is you have to sell a single issue for $3 once a month. And
it was like $2.25 at that time.
That's a shitty way to sell comics, though, at least manga. Honestly, it's a shitty way to sell comics in general, and the system needs to change. But
that's why they're not making any money.
Exactly. Well, meanwhile, Viz eventually realized, like, oh, no, we put the collections in a bookstore and sell it to people who would never go into a fucking comic shop and become very rich.
The Tankobons.
Once I learned how Japanese publishers distributed manga, I was like, all comics are a ripoff. I want a phone book of comics every week that I can just read whatever ones I want. I'll get a new one next week. Like, that is the ideal.
They tried it with Shonen Jump, which I had a subscription to for 2 years. And when I was home for Christmas, I found my big crate of Shonen Jumps. And even that is still like,
it's very small compared to maybe a fourth of the size of the Japanese Shonen Jump.
But still, once a month, that's pretty. You get One Piece and Dragon Ball and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Hikaru no Go and a bunch. And
anybody else out there remember Mix Zine, another attempt to sell a thing? It was
for Goyles.
Yes, it was. But I read it. It had a very poorly localized Sailor Moon where they just have a first line of she says, my name is Usagi. Everybody calls me Bunny. So she's called Bunny for the rest of the story. I'm like, no.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a literal translation, but you don't call like Midori, hey, it's Green. Hey, Green, what's up?
Hey, Green, what's up, Green?
Or what's that movie called? Like, there's a movie called like On, which means like red bean paste. Mm. And in America, it's called like Red Bean. And it's like, well, you lose, it means something there.
Yeah,
Red
yeah.
Bean means nothing here.
But it's a quite a dramatic ending to this, a real cliffhanger that really hooks you into, like, I got to see this next episode, man. What's going to happen?
I mean, despite the perviness, it's like, I kind of want to be in this world and I want to move like these characters. It makes you feel like energized to watch these characters move around. It's like a very fun show to watch.
They do like superhuman crap all the time, and that's exciting and fun to watch.
So I did watch the second episode, and I will just briefly say there's more sports-themed villains, more rape jokes, and more fan service, too.
Yes.
As Misato would say.
I've also only watched the first two, but I will continue watching it.
Though I would not be surprised at all if it does exactly what Devilman Crybaby did of tricking you into thinking it is a Villain of the Week show for five episodes and then a few episodes and then have a huge twist of like everything you thought you knew is a lie and it's actually this. Mm-hmm. Like,
is that a spoiler?
No, this is my guess.
Okay. Is it a spoiler for Devilman Crybaby?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. Sorry.
That's maybe. Okay. I mean, there's a big change, but it's called Devilman Crybaby.
I want to thank Jose for choosing this. I've been meaning to watch it for a while, and now I'm going to watch the whole thing, and it's like, I don't know why I've been sitting on this. I still need to finish A Little Witch Academia. That's another great show. If you want Studio Trigger, after they clean up their act a bit for families, it's fun to watch Kill a Kill and be like, how did they ever make an all-ages anime? These people, like...
Yeah, the show's very wholesome.
Yeah.
When they put out that first... I've not watched the show yet, but when they put that first short out, that they were like, this is all the money we had, it's 3 minutes. And we're being like, this is amazing. You're going to make a show out of
and
this?
And they kickstarted a second one, too. They were one of the first anime production companies to go to Kickstarter, and they made way more than what they needed for it, too. Mm-hmm. More companies need to like go to Kickstarter like that and get outside of, that's my biggest problem with Kill a Kill, I think, are because of the system it exists in. Like, if they make it hornier and if they play the game, then they make more money in the traditional way. Mm-hmm. But if they go outside of it, then they can, I feel like they're more free to tell the stories they want to tell.
Yeah.
I do think the horniness is coming from inside the house a little bit.
They're like being horny.
They're into that, yeah. So
we saw that, like, we've been seeing that change happen, and right now it's Devilman was like a huge success, and that was Netflix that produced it. We also had Neo Yokio earlier this
fucking
year.
Fucking love that. I thought it was going to be so stupid, and I loved it.
It's amazing. Yeah. And then we saw, like, first they went to European money, and we got stuff like that weird basketball mech show.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like, and then now they're realizing, like, hey, Americans can, like, instead of us making it and then trying to sell it to Americans, let's let Americans pay. Just like Iron Man gets saved by a Chinese doctor because we need China to give us money, or Black Panther went to Korea because, you know, they got a tax break by shooting in Korea.
Yeah.
Even though that's a great example of it, because that scene's amazing.
And they stream it to us first or second at the very least. Yeah.
Or simulcast. That's happening a lot more now.
Sometimes there's simul dubs even, right? Are there simul dubs? There has to be.
Oh, yeah, that's like how My Hero Boruto. Academia does that.
Okay.
I am shocked that we've come to such a streaming age in anime, because they hate piracy. They are a very... When I say they, I'm making a very prejudicial statement on all Japan. But no, in the world of anime, it is a very physical media type world. Like, they don't count. I've heard this about the New Japan Wrestling streaming service, that they have almost more signups outside of Japan than in Japan, because it's still not a widely used idea of, like, I am going to get the internet and stream this media. Mm-hmm. It's still a very physical media based country. So I'm impressed that they're starting, animation companies are more adapting to streaming both in Japan and outside of Japan as a way to make money outside of the old system of, we air 24 episodes on TV, we sell you the OVA for $100.
You buy it on 8 DVDs.
You buy it on 8 DVDs, that's $400. We sell you a toy, we sell you a bunch of boob toys that are $100 each. That's where we make the money off of a tiny audience. Instead, they can have a much wider audience and not have to chisel every penny or every yen they can out of their otaku fan base.
Yeah, and one more thing about Little Witch Academia. This is Studio Trigger making a show about girls riding brooms. Not one panty shot in the entire series.
Yeah.
They do the thing that happens in some video games where it's like, if you try to look up the skirt, not that I have, it's just a void, like a black hole where the skirt meets the legs. I'm like, that is some self-control, Studio Trigger. I've seen what you've done before.
Yes,
can I just draw one sliver of panty?
Yeah.
Though if you want a hornier version of Kill la Kill, then I would say watch Cutie Honey.
Yes.
You're going to get that. But it's gorgeously animated. It's such a good show.
It's beautiful.
OKKO actually did an episode that I swear is a tribute to Cutie Honey.
I wouldn't put it past them. Mm-hmm. So thanks for listening to What a Cartoon, everybody, and thanks again to Jose for this great recommendation. We appreciate you and your donation. I've been one of your hosts, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday at retronauts.com, or go to Retronauts in your podcatcher. It's a classic gaming podcast. We've been doing it for 11 years, so there's got to be something we've covered that you like. So I recommend that you look through all of our episodes, pick a topic you like, and download that one. I think you'll like it. Retronauts.com, everybody. Thank you.
And Bob's other show is with me on Talking Simpsons, where we go through every episode of The Simpsons from the beginning, which got me and Bob into the world of animation podcasting. Yes. Though this was our true dream. I will talk about The Simpsons all day, but I want to talk the way I talk about The Simpsons, about all cartoons. And that's what I want. I am happy to do the show. I'm so excited. And we only started it because we hit our goal on Patreon, thanks to support of wonderful patrons out there. And if you wanted to get this show a week early and ad free, you can just get that starting $5 a month at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Tell your friends about it. There's tons of awesome exclusives there, including us going through every episode of the first season of Futurama.
Yeah, and if you like hearing my voice talk about cartoons and you're just thinking, oh, I wish my eyes had something to do, then go to youtube.com/cartoons101, where when I am currently making it also as a Patreon, patreon.com/cartoons101, I've done a bunch of videos about the new DuckTales show, which have been like my moneymakers. Like, people still watch them even though like that show's already aired and you're just learning about the trailer from this. Did a video about you mentioned in another show we did, Hank, which is about how great the Goofy movie is, mm-hmm. which is so great that it's the best film of the Disney Renaissance, and I will fight anyone to the death.
Wow.
I want a true aspect ratio Blu-ray of that. It only
where
came
the
out
hell
in
is
full
it?
Frame yeah. DVD. It's a ripoff.
Yeah, where is it, Disney? Give us a freaking Blu-ray. Come on, you made a Blu-ray for Saludos Amigos. Give us a Blu-ray for this.
Come on. Well, and also from the anime angle, you did one about, I believe, Osamu Tezuka's final film?
Yes, a short film that took him years and years to make that is like an exploration of the history of animation told by a little squirrel chasing a lady squirrel.
It's amazing.
But not in the Pepe Le Pew way, in a much more wholesome way. He's a flying squirrel.
It's a consensual relationship.
Yeah. And on Twitter, I'm at Mr. Matt J, but I'm also at Disney 80s 90s, Disney 80s 90s, where I post a bunch of cool, obscure, weird stuff from the Disney company from the 80s and 90s, like old specials from the Disney parks or old Disney Channel shows, like the live action Alice in Wonderland show, which is crazy weird. And you can learn weird trivia, like the first person to ride Splash Mountain was Ernest.
Know what I mean? That's how you have to skip that fact.
You know what I mean?
Sorry.
Yep.
So thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with more cartoon fun. Later.